Since 1998, Stamps.com has been an indispensable tool for nearly 1 million businesses. Stamps.com brings the services of the U.S. Postal Service and the UPS shipping right to your computer. Whether you're an office sending invoices, a side hustle Etsy shop, or a full-blown warehouse shipping out orders, Stamps.com will make your life easier. All you need is a computer and standard printer. No special supplies or equipment. Within minutes, you're up and running, printing official postage for any letter, any package, anywhere you want to send. And you'll get exclusive discounts on postage and shipping from USPS and UPS. Once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup or drop it off. No traffic, no lines. Cut the confusion out of shipping. With Stamps.com's new rate advisor tool, you can compare shipping rates and timeliness to easily find the best option. As a small business, we ship swag to Patreon and merch, and Stamps.com makes life so much easier. We are able to print and pack everything without going anywhere. Save time and money with Stamps.com. There's no risk. And with my promo code POD, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in POD. That's Stamps.com, promo code POD. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. And I wanted to open this up, this discussion up, well, not even a discussion, just kind of an announcement, kind of some transparency. And I just always want to be super honest with you guys. So we have some really great news. We have added a new person to our team. The reason that we have done that is because, well, I, as you know, have been doing the editing for the podcast for some time. I had no knowledge of how to do it, no experience of how to do it. Am I amazing? No. Do I try really hard? Have I learned a lot? And do I think I've made a lot of improvement? I do. I really do. With that being said, what comes with that is I try and prepare a really great case for you guys, as Melissa does as well, and I also edit them, which takes pretty significant time, and lately, you know, with life and everything, and also trying to build on some extra stuff that we can do for you guys, I just really wanted to make sure that our editing, and Melissa too, did not fall by the wayside. We want everything that we do to be quality. So we toyed with the idea of getting someone in to help us out. And we were lucky enough to find someone that fit the bill. They want to do it. They enjoy doing it. They're good at it. And while they need to get to know us and just what it's like to edit something like this, you know, she's really proven herself and we're really pleased with her. She actually did our last episode. Round of applause for her. I'm sorry. She did the last two episodes, my apologies, for us. And we're really happy with her. And it makes room for Melissa and I to focus a lot of energy and attention onto the cases, onto social media, and our extras and whatever we can do. So I want to give her a warm welcome. And I hope that you guys understand and appreciate where we're at with things right now. And of course, as always, if you have any feedback, all three of us certainly are receptive to it.
I could not have said anything better. I think you did understate a little bit what you've achieved from never having... Amy went from thinking we're going to record our podcast to on our cell phone to being our producer. That feat is not small. And, you know, we want to focus, like Amy said, on good content, on making sure we're giving you more that, you know, the Patreon's getting the lives. We're interacting on social media. And the one thing we could really offboard is the editing. And luckily, Caitlin stepped up and is amazing. And she, like us, is into true crime and enjoys this. So that was a huge piece for us. And the pieces fit. And we're going to move forward like that. We're excited.
Absolutely. We're excited. We're optimistic. As anybody else, change is really scary. I won't even speak for Melissa, but change is super scary for me. And it's been my baby, and I've cried when I couldn't get it right. I've been overjoyed when I have. So there's a lot of passion in it for me, and I wouldn't pick someone, and neither would Melissa, if we didn't think that they could do a job with passion and integrity. Without further ado, we welcome Caitlin on board officially, and we love and appreciate you guys. So keep all your theories coming. Keep all your thoughts coming. And like I said, feedback is welcome too.
Yes. All right. So this is your case today.
This is my case today. Absolutely. Believe it or not, I've got a couple of things going. I guess I'm in a better position than sometimes I am, which feels like I can't grasp the case that I really want that has theories to it that really fits our outline. Today was different. I'm glad. I'm happy. I think you're going to like this one. I think it's going to drive you as nuts as all of the others. No. It will not drive you nuts like the ones from the last few weeks and a Judy case. Anyway, I'll get right into it.
Well, I'll tell you this. I pulled up the Cheller Project, obviously, because you texted me the name of the case and all that. And I'm going to resist doing any more Googling until you tell me the story. Because I already am like, wait, what?
I'm surprised that you think that after the Charlie Project, because there wasn't a lot of information in comparison to what I found in other sources.
Oh, now I'm even more excited.
Okay.
Please tell me the story.
The case I'm going to talk to you about today is the case of Clashindra Hall. Clashindra Hall, or Clea, as she's known, was born on March 30th of 1976. Clea's parents were Laurel and Willie, and they also had two other sons. Laurel and Willie were very involved with their children. They were strict, but not really in a domineering way. And I want to just clear that up a little bit, because when people use the word strict, I think they think very authoritative, mean, cold, unfeeling. But that doesn't sound like what Laurel and Willie were at all. They were very involved with their children. They were just protective. Like, they wanted to know where their kids were. They knew what they were doing in school. They knew what their extracurriculars were. It wasn't just like 4 o'clock rolls around and the kids are out of school and they're gone until 10 o'clock at night. No, they knew everything that was going on. Clea was really special. Growing up in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, her dreams were bigger than this town. And I don't mean that in a demeaning way to the town. I just mean that she was prepared to spread her wings and go other places. Clea's biggest dream was to work in pediatrics, so probably like a pediatric doctor or a physician, and was doing everything she could to propel her there. Clea was a fabulous student. She followed all the rules and expectations, and she was involved in extracurricular activities. And by senior year, this paid off for her. And Clea's dreams were coming true. She was picked to speak at her graduating class's commencement ceremony. I don't believe she was valedictorian or salutatorian, but I do believe that she had garnered some respect from the community, that she had something to offer, and people wanted to hear what it was, so she was given that honor. Clea had a scholarship to Tennessee State University to start pre-med courses, and she was scheduled to intern at a pediatric office for the summer in Boston. She was like ready to jump into life. She's from this small place in Arkansas. Well, I actually don't know the population, so that's not fair for me to say. But she's from, you know, Pine Bluff, Arkansas. That's the furthest south almost that you can go. And she's going to Tennessee, way up north, but she's also going to be in Boston. So she's wasting no time whatsoever. As if things weren't already amazing enough for Clea, she also had a really good and flexible, I mean, maybe it was low paying, but she had a job working for a local doctor, Dr. Larry Amos. Clea wasn't really doing anything related to her field of study, which was she wanted to go into the medical field. And you'd think if she was working for a doctor that she probably would be, but she wasn't. She was just working for the doctor, and she was taking care of his financials. I don't specifically know what that means, but in some of the YouTubes and articles I've read, it seems like she was doing a lot of, like, writing checks on behalf of the doctor, things like that.
Yeah, I can imagine that part of it was just having a doctor on her resume. I remember when I was in college and thought I wanted to go to law school and got a job at a law firm, not actually doing anything that was related to legal work, but you have a law firm on your resume.
Oh, I didn't even actually think about that.
That would be my logic about it.
And I think that's reasonable because she sounds like she maps things out in advance. It would seem to me that that was probably planful on her part. Anyway, Dr. Amos lived relatively close with his child and his wife, and Clea would come after school or her activities after school or on weekends. The flexibility was probably the most appealing because she didn't have to give up any activities. She didn't have to basically make sure that she had to cut out her personal prioritizations to be able to do this job. So it worked out for her. Clea's parents were also supportive of her working, as they were able and willing to transport her to and from work. They didn't love the idea of her walking alone because I guess the doctor and the school were relatively close in distance, but they really just didn't approve of her going anywhere alone, which honestly is a pretty wise decision, not only in this day and age, but as we know, back then as well. Clea would get dropped off at Dr. Amos's whenever she had to work. And then Clea would simply call her parents to pick her up when she was done. She worked there for about a year, so it was a pretty solid routine that they had down. They'd pick her up from activities or from school or bring her from home right to the doctor's. She'd work. Whenever she was done with her work, it was no set time in particular. She would just call one of her parents and her parents would come get her. One thing that I heard, I believe it was on YouTube, was that if her parents ever couldn't pick her up, that they would never just let her walk home. They would actually send one of her brothers to go and get her. Now, I didn't see that really anywhere else, but I thought that it sounded probably like something that they would do. So I didn't completely discount that as false. On May 9th of 1994, it was a routine Monday. Laurel dropped Clea off. Clea went to school as normal. And then when it was time to go to work, Laurel dropped Clea off as usual at Dr. Amos's house. Now, before I continue, I do want to remind you or re-remind you that Clea is at the tail end of her senior year. So I kind of want you to picture that. She has just spent a lot of time going through a lot of the senior activities. There were probably dances and events that she went to. She seemed totally happy. But throughout all of this and all of this change, and she's now 18, so she legally has the freedom to do anything. She seemed to have a great time at these events and remained respectful and responsible of the rules. Around 8 p.m., which was sort of like an average time that Clea would end her workday and a time that her parents probably would expect to call from her, Clea called and she just asked at this point if she had any messages. Picture it, 1994, no cell phones. And when you're away from home, nope, you have no idea who calls you or tries to get a hold of you. So if you're calling home, you're going to say, hey, mom, did anyone call for me? Did anyone leave me a message? That's the norm. At that point in that casual conversation, Clea also said that she would be just a short while longer, but would call when she was done with her work. Maybe another half hour or so. Laurel then waited patiently, but she dozed off, which wouldn't have been unusual. And she always answers the phone when it rings. She always is awakened by the phone. Suddenly, at almost 1 a.m., Laurel was awakened when Willie came home from work. Laurel looked at the time, realized that Clea had never called, and she immediately called Dr. Amos. He picked up on the first ring. When asked, he only stated that she just got into a car at 8:30 or around then, and kind of assumed, as usual, that it was her mother or father picking her up, and thought nothing of it. Laurel's first thoughts were, maybe Clea could be kind of rebelling, maybe? Or she's just excited about her new adventures, so she decides to prioritize her fun? Didn't really seem like Clea, didn't seem like anything she had ever done. Well, she had never done that. But I think this is her mom just trying to make sense of she was safely at work and then she got picked up in a car, so maybe she's hanging out with friends. Anyway, they let that night pass, hoping Clea would just return home. The next day, when Clea's brother reported home that Clea wasn't in school, panic really set in and police were called. And please guess what happens next?
Tell me she's an adult and she can leave on her own.
Pretty much verbatim.
Oh my, she's 18 in high school.
She hasn't been gone 24 hours. She's of legal age. Please come back in 24 hours when we can actually do something. Laurel had to wait the day before reporting Clea missing. Still, when she did, police still didn't seem concerned. And unfortunately, it wasn't until a few days had passed, and police seemed a little more involved at that point. When Clea's parents didn't get the response they wanted, they kind of tried to do searches and put up flyers on their own. What else were they going to do?
No, I mean, I would totally respect that. It's just insane to me. She's in high school.
I agree with you. I feel like just do your due diligence and search. If you're wrong, then great. You still did the right thing. I don't know. I get into the same thing every time we bring it up.
I know. I feel the same way.
A few days passed, and police seemed a little more invested, like I said, but not by much. They interviewed people in Clea's life, including Dr. Amos, who recounted exactly, almost, what he told Laurel and Willie. Still another 2 weeks passed, and at that point, police did search Dr. Amos' home. There did not seem to be any signs of a struggle or anything like that, and it was virtually untouched. They did not find anything. They interviewed someone that they thought might be a boyfriend or someone that Clea was interested in. They didn't find anything. He cooperated. He took a polygraph. It was inconclusive. They did do searches, but really, nothing ever came of this. When looking into Dr. Amos's life, yes, there were some shiesty things that happened, and questionably, he was a hostile partner, according to exes. Clea didn't seem to be involved with anyone that anyone could picture her going off with, so it was really very confusing. At the end of the day, there have been no sightings of Clea. There's been no evidence to point to what could have happened to her. The person that, quote unquote, picked her up that night in a car has never been identified. Neither has the car. And that's kind of where it ended. Her parents have not stopped trying to get spotlight onto this case. In, I believe it was around 2012 or so, contractors who previously worked at the doctor's house had come forward and said they did work for the doctor in the early 90s, and there was an undeniably awful smell and some blood, perhaps, that they saw. I don't know why they waited, but they did. Police got a warrant. They went in. They found nothing. They do say the doctor has been really cooperative. He is not a suspect, only a person of interest. However, they do say that there are many persons of interest, whoever they might be. And that's where we are.
I feel like that's a terrible statement. There's a lot of persons of interest. We just don't know who they are.
Basically, we're left with not a whole lot of theories, but you might have already guessed them. We have one, which is the doctor had something to do with this. We have Clea was picked up by a person in the car, and they are involved in her disappearance. Clea walked and met foul play. And, I mean, there's no one really saying that she walked away from her life. She had left her purse, wallet, anything that she had at home. That's not really an argument. Died by suicide is not really an argument. Didn't look on the Reddit, but in any of the articles and the YouTubes and videos that I've seen, no one's really mentioned those theories. So that's kind of where we are. Where would you like to start?
So I'm glad. Actually, I'd like you to tell me about walking. Because in my opinion, from what it sounds like, it's either going to be the doctor is involved or she got in a car. Where? How do we get she left on foot?
So the thoughts about her setting off on foot are that Clea tried maybe to call her mother and didn't get a response. She decided that she was going to walk home. This isn't something that she typically did.
But either way, the doctor claims he saw her get in the car.
Well, that would mean if we accept that she's walking, then the doctor's lying. And if we accept the doctor's word that she got in the car, she couldn't have walked. So you can't have both.
Right, and that's what I mean. Like, either she got, in my opinion, either the doctor's involved or she got in a car.
I don't see why we would go right to walking. So she called her mom at 8 o'clock. So if she finished her work right before 8:30, because 8:30 is when she got in the car, that's assuming she only gave her mom, at the most, a couple of chances to pick up the phone before she gave up. So my question would be, you know your brothers are home too, so why not keep calling until you get an answer? Why not ask the doctor? Why not ask his wife to accompany you home?
I was just going to ask that. Who lived in the home with the doctor that she was working in?
His wife and child. So for me, I feel like 30 minutes, not even. There's no way she called her mom at 8 and said, it's going to be a while before I'm done with my work, and finished at 8:05. She worked another, I don't know, 15 minutes at a minimum. And then what? She gave her mom 10 minutes of effort before she tried somebody else to come and get her?
So are you thinking she didn't ever call her mom?
I struggle with it a little bit because one thing that I heard was that, A, her mom will always answer a ringing phone. Granted, people aren't robots, so it could be missed. She could have been in a deep sleep. But the argument to that is her brothers were home. So if she wasn't answering, one of her brothers would have.
And I agree with that statement. So my next question is, do you think she didn't make a phone call?
I don't think she made a phone call. We don't have any phone records, although there could have been some, but the police waited several weeks before they checked phone records. But it just doesn't make sense to me that she tried for, let's even say worst case scenario. She was done with her work at 8:10, 8:05. Typically, when you call someone back then, the phone rings, you don't get anyone. You're like, okay, well, maybe they're doing something. I'm going to try again in 10 minutes. So, to be fair, she tries again at 8:20. So at 8:20, we have to assume she gave up and tried another person, whoever that was, if the car scenario is true, and had them come and get her. That's not a lot of effort to give your mom to come and get you or to pick up the phone.
Okay, so if she didn't call, we're in the same space we were before, which is the doctor's involved, or she prearranged with someone else or called someone else for a ride. Because I agree with you. She likely didn't call her house.
which means she wouldn't have been done with work. Or was interrupted in her work.
Or she told her mom she'd be a while, thinking she was done and was going to go out with someone else and didn't want her mom to know if her mom was strict.
It's possible.
So here's the thing. I grew up with really strict parents, right? And not in the exact same way that she did. They're not overbearing. They weren't, like, all up in our business. But we had rules, expectations, curfews, all of the things. Sorry, Mom, but that's something I would have done. Oh, I'm going to be at work late. So I don't have to say, like, oh, I'm going out with these people. Because then she'd want to know who they were, what we were doing, what our plan was. I mean, I can remember having to be like, okay, we're going to go to the movies. The movie is at 8:10. The running time is 2 hours and 26 minutes. So we should be done by 10:35. Can I get dinner after and then be home by midnight? Like, so I can understand her buying herself some time in that way.
Here's the problem with that. There is a loophole, but she would have to be really bold to do it. She would have had to get back to the doctor's house and make the phone call from his home and be outside his home, hoping that he wouldn't say, hey, what are you still doing here, as he's looking out of his window, to have the mom come and get her.
Or her friends drop her off and she says the doctor dropped her off. She's like, oh, I worked late. I didn't want to bug you, so I just asked him to give me a ride home.
It's possible. It certainly is. And I can't really argue that. You know, good, responsible, awesome kids do bend the rules slightly sometimes. They're not wrong for it. They're exercising boundaries. They're not bad kids for it. But it certainly happens. And
for sure. And I could see myself trying to pull off that kind of behavior in high school.
Now, I know this is kind of a dumb thing to say because I already know the answer, but you would still do that at 18, even though you're a legal adult, right?
Yes. I went, as long as I was in high school, my parents, I was in high school, and then they paid for college, so I got a little more freedom, but they basically said, like, we're paying for your education, we're paying for your life, so guess what? You still follow our rules. And this is where the strictness comes in.
And knowing you, too, like, you probably just would have been super respectful if you were under their roof, because that's what you do.
Yeah. And, like, even when I moved home for a little bit after college, it was like, I mean, I lived at school, like, do what you want, but, like, if you're not coming home, you need to tell us. If you're coming home super late, you need to tell us. Like, it's the strictness without being overbearing.
Right.
So I'm just saying, I could see that behavior. Now, again, I don't know why that person wouldn't have come forward. I would imagine more than one person would know what she's doing. Like, if I would have done that, I would have been to go out with, like, a group of friends. It wouldn't have been, you know what I mean? Like, I can't imagine having, like, a whole secret friend that no one knew about.
And that person would have to be sneaking around, too.
Yeah, because they would have come forward if they were the ones that picked her up. Unless they're involved.
Right. But then it's like, could they have kept their mouth shut? Because there doesn't seem to have been any...
Well, someone did.
What do you mean?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think she left her life or died by suicide?
No.
Okay. So someone is a part of her disappearance and someone kept their mouth shut.
Right. I guess I just feel like a high schooler going to meet up with a girl or a friend. I don't know. Would have said to somebody that they were, or would have peeped later about it. I don't know. Not all the time. So how much weight do you want to give that, Melissa?
I mean, tell me what the alternate is. I mean, okay, wait, stop. Do we agree that this is probably foul play?
Do you think, yes. Yes, I do, because even if she did walk, she encountered danger.
Okay, right, okay. Because she didn't leave her life, she didn't die by suicide, like, let's just be realistic. Okay, if it's not a person that picked her up, because we can deduce that if a person picked her up and then dropped her off somewhere safely, that person would have come forward and said, no, here's what happened, I dropped her off, and then whatever. So either the person that picked her up did something, or she walked out of the house, which means the doctor is lying, and encounter foul play, or the doctor is involved. Correct? That's sort of the spectrum?
Yeah. But the minute I start to explore taking a walk back home, I have to ask myself, why is the doctor lying about seeing her?
What do you mean? Like, why is he making up she got in a car?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a completely justifiable.
If you accept that he's not involved, then you also are accepting that he's a liar for some reason.
If she walked.
If she walked.
If the story of her getting in a car is accurate, then he's not a liar.
Correct.
Okay, so tell me about him.
Well, he hasn't really been convicted or anything like that of any shady doings. But I do understand that there have been some shady wrongdoings. Maybe when it comes to finances, he's really stingy. He tries to get out of paying people for jobs. He didn't pay Clea very well. Honestly, he's probably just a typical stingy guy. Now, I have heard on a YouTube channel that Willie and Laurel had met up with his ex-wife, who did say that he was abusive in some way, shape, or form, but I don't know how many sources they found to corroborate that kind of nature within him.
Not only that, but just be, and I'm not, take what I'm about to say for what it's worth and not for my statement in general, I guess. Just because he's abusive toward an ex doesn't mean he'll abuse an employee.
Right. I mean, honestly, a lot of people want to hide that behavior so that they can maintain a good reputation.
And I wasn't trying to downplay the fact that he was abusive by saying just because he was abusive, but...
Oh, no, he's garbage if you abuse other people.
Agreed. Okay. Just wanted to make that statement.
Oh, yeah. Garbage. Anyway, the other piece to that is Laurel has said Clea never... ever said that she was uncomfortable with the doctor, that he was mean or abusive or anything disparaging. Honestly, take that for what it's worth.
Okay, so tell me about the people that say that there was a smell in his house. What kind of doctor was he?
I'm not sure, but I think that he wasn't directly involved in hands-on medical with patients. I think he was involved in something else, but he was an MD to the best of my understanding.
Okay. Tell me about the people that worked on his house.
Over the years, he's had a lot of general contractors come in and do work. It's been reported that he was stingy with people, that he'd often complain about the job being done and try and either get out of paying or something to that effect. One of the general contractors came forward many, many years later, and reported that when they did work on his house in the early 90s, that there was what they described as blood and an awful odor coming from wherever they were working in the house. This tip was credible enough, I guess, for police and a team to go in there with a warrant and search, and they did not confirm that any of that was, at least at that point in time, still in the home.
So what do you think happened?
The most popular, the most common theory has to do with the doctor. And I get it. But I cannot think of a motive for him doing that, A. And B, where he put her body. So I'm a little bit stuck.
Right. And then his wife had to be complicit. Because there's no way you kill someone in your house that someone else doesn't know.
I'd say it'd be difficult to get away with, but possible. But he'd have to be pretty brazen.
See, I think it's just as likely she got in a car with someone.
I do too, I think.
I think it's just as likely that she met someone. Maybe he's a little older. Maybe she doesn't want to tell her mom. Says she's working late. She's just going to go to dinner with him, and then her plan is her to drop her off. And something happened.
And then they just were able to hide her body.
Right, because no one even knows who they were.
Because at this point, we do think she's probably deceased, correct?
Yes, I do, unfortunately.
Yes, it's 1994. she would be mid-40s.
Yeah, I would think she is, and I would think, I don't know, obviously, but that would be my guess.
You don't think maybe this person tried to drop her off at home and she met foul play between getting dropped off maybe a few houses down before home? You know what made me think of that is Martha Moxley.
Okay, but then why not come forward and say, hey, sorry, I picked her up at the doctor. We went to dinner. I dropped her off down the street from her house, and give the police that lead at least.
Maybe, and I think a lot of people would probably do that, but there are some people that would be, oh my gosh, I'm the last person to have seen her. They're going to pin this on me.
I mean, I guess. I don't love it.
Go back to the doctor for 1 second. Can you think of any motive that would involve, I don't know, getting really angry and murdering someone?
The only thing I can think of is something about money, because she was doing his books and his checks. But she's 18. Like, even if she thinks she discovers things, I have to think that an authority figure could probably talk her out of it.
Maybe. It would have to be really shiesty.
Yeah, and it would have to be blatantly obvious to the point that she got it, figured it out, and was like, oh, I'm totally going to be able to explain this. Like, scams like that are tough.
I would like to hope that police went through all his financial records, but being that they were really slow in picking up in the investigation, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that I land, like, honestly, almost 50-50. 100% foul play, but 50% this doctor and 50% whoever picked her up.
Yeah, there's no way she walked, because then that would make the doctor a liar.
Right. So what? And where do you land?
I can't fully land on the doctor, and I know the internet really thinks that the doctor's involved. I'm really missing a stronger motive. And money is all it takes sometimes. Some people say he made a move on her, but there's been no evidence that he's been coming onto her for. It could have been the first time. Maybe.
That's really, 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 really ballsy to do that with your wife in the house. And then when she rejects you, to then harm her in some way with your wife and child in the house.
Agreed. And you also know she's toward the end of her workday. She just called her mom at 8. How could you bet that her parents aren't going to come at, say, 9 o'clock in person looking for their daughter?
Right. Yeah, I lean toward...
I think I just talked myself into getting in the car.
Yeah. That's where I lean.
I'm not completely discounting him, but now that I laid it out like that.
Me either. Yeah. I feel the same way. You ready? Are you ready to open it up?
Absolutely. I know that a lot of people are going to come for the doctor. And tell me more about that.
Yeah. We'd love to hear everyone's theories. Some people say things and I'm like, darn, like, why didn't I think of that?
Absolutely. And as you know, sometimes I would listen to things when editing on playback and be like, wait a minute, I should have said this or that. But honestly, when you're discussing a case for the first time, there's things that you overlook for sure. It's not until we go back later and really examine everything that we're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
100%. So tell us what you think. All right, guys. So this week, as you know, rolls into Thanksgiving. We are going to enjoy the holiday with our families. We hope you do the same. That being said, there will not be an episode released on the 28th or 29th, whatever day you get it. But we'll be back the first week of December with a whole new case.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman.
Audio production by Caitlin Reynolds.